Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Friday, February 24th, 2023. South Sudanese officials say they are ready to receive refugees.
We've been returning back from Uganda, from Ethiopia, from Kenya, from Sudan, from Congo. They are returning into South Sudan.
And authorities in Warrap State and Lake State say calm has returned to the area following the killings of 36 people this week during intercommunal fighting.
The organized forces, including the head of the organized forces here, were sent to Rumbek North to separate them, and that's why the situation came to normality.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's president, Salva Kiir, has appealed to his country's more than 2 million refugees to return home. The Associated Press says President Salva Kiir held his first meeting with displaced people Wednesday, 2 weeks after visiting Pope Francis met a group of them in the capital, Juba. Mr. Kiir said repatriating refugees from camps in other countries should be the top of his agenda, now that the country is transitioning from a military government to elections in 2025. President Kiir said the government will provide security for those who wish to return home, and that those who cannot will be allocated land in states where they were displaced. South Sudan has been recovering from a five-year civil war that ended in 2018 and killed hundreds of thousands of people.
John Darby, deputy chairperson of South Sudan Refugee Commission, says the government is working.
The International Rescue Committee is asking for $1.3 billion appeal to meet the needs of over 2 million South Sudanese refugees and their host communities. Millions of South Sudanese are refugees in neighboring countries after violence broke out in 2013 and again in 2016. For VOA News, Dengai Deng has more from Juba. We are experiencing some difficulties playing that tape here. Bear with us.
John Darby, deputy chairperson of South Sudan Refugee Commission, says the government is working with its partners on humanitarian support to enhance the capacity of the communities for the sustainable return of refugees.
We're working now at the level of IGAD as a regional body, together with Sudan and South Sudan on what you call durable solution. And that durable solution is targeting people who are coming back. And up to now, as I talk, the population which has returned to South Sudan from the neighboring countries is 620,000. It's a huge number, very huge number of people, individuals, families. We are returning back from Uganda, from Ethiopia, from Kenya, from Sudan, from Congo. They are returning into South Sudan.
Speaking via the messaging hub, WhatsApp from Nairobi, Sally Beth Anyanga, the East Africa Regional Communications Officer for the International Rescue Committee, says the humanitarian organization needs the $1.3 million to help South Sudanese refugees and asylum seekers in several countries.
There are 2.15 million South Sudanese refugees spread across five countries, that is in Uganda, in Sudan, in Ethiopia, in Kenya, and DRC. It is also estimated that the numbers will increase to around 2.2 million by the end of 2023. So currently, from the refugee response plan for 2023, we need $1.33 billion to be able to respond to the refugee crisis in South Sudan.
Anyanga says the IRC aims to preserve asylum space in the region for refugees and expand it to include freedom of movement and settlement options outside camps.
Some of the key challenges faced by the refugees are freedom of movement and settlement outside the camp. We've also seen their protection concerns for women and children. And this is because as men walk several kilometers to go and look for feed for their livestock, Women are left to be in charge of the house and to take care of the house chores. And also sometimes they have to walk long distances in search of water. And this exposes them to potential sexual abuse and other forms of harassment.
South Sudan is facing a deadly mix of crises, from conflict and mass displacement caused by fighting and climate change-induced disasters like flooding to disease outbreaks and soaring rates of malnutrition, says the IRC. Anyanga says finding safe and sustainable solutions to their displacement and supporting vulnerable choices to either remain with local communities or return home is what the IRC is doing with money they receive from donors.
The message that the International Rescue Committee would like to give to the government is to continue to maintain asylum space for the refugees who are moving because of conflict and climate shocks and finding refuge in neighboring countries. Also to enable freedom of movement and access to inclusion into services like education, health, and even livelihoods. And also for South Sudan government, it is very, very vital that peace is maintained and efforts to manage and mitigate climate shocks.
South Sudan President Salva Kiir this week urged the more than 2 million South Sudanese refugees living in neighboring countries to begin returning home. Kiir made the call while meeting representatives of the IDPs and refugee leaders from various camps across the country on Wednesday. Kiir said repatriating those citizens was at the top of the government's priority list. While calling on refugees to return home, Kiir said nothing about South Sudan's continued political or economic challenges. The country has yet to fully implement the 2018 peace accord that ended the civil war. Parties of the country are still grappling with deadly intercommunal violence. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding in Juba.
Officials in Lake State and Warab States say security forces deployed to Mapel in Lake State have restored calm following violent clashes that killed more than 30 people this week. Manyang David Mayar reports for VOA from Juba.
Information ministers from Warab and Lagos State say security forces managed to quell the clashes at Mapel Center in Rumbek North County. Lagos State Acting Information Minister William Koji says local authorities will continue to monitor the situation.
The organized forces, including the head of the organized forces here, were sent to Rumbek North to separate them. And that's why the situation came to normality. We will not allow for that kind of fight to continue among the citizens, as long as the one people of the same region, the same people of this country.
Warab State Information Minister William Wall says the state governor instructed organized forces to stop the intercommunal fighting.
The governor of Warab State, upon hearing this, he directed the security agents to the scene. And of course, in the evening, they managed to retrieve back the cattle from the hotspot to the side of Romney. And therefore, in the morning, there was accessibility from the side of the government of Warab State to address the armies. And from that time, the armies from the side of Luanjiang Warab State have listened and they have accepted not to make any further revenge.
Both information ministers say 36 people were killed and 45 others were wounded. Wall says the fighting began when young men from Tony East allegedly drove their cattle to grazing areas in Rumbek North and were attacked.
11 youths from Luanjiang were accompanying their knees to the direction of Rumbek North. On their way, they fall into an ambush. Five people were killed on the spot and one was wounded. Upon hearing the gunshots, their colleagues from Untur cattle camp, Panyang cattle camp and Malit cattle camp had the gunshot and rushed into the scene. And the full-scale fighting took place.
VOA could not independently verify the number of people killed and wounded during the clashes. Lakes State Acting Information Minister Koji says what sparked the fighting is still not known to authorities in the two areas.
Luanjiang community, they used to come to Rumbek North purposely to get water and some green pasture. What always caused the problem there, it might be related to some cattle types, it might be related to differences within. The good of it, people of Lake State themselves are still in control of the governor in Tony Mabor. The issue now is our neighboring state, especially like Warap and Tony East community in particular.
Both information ministers say a nationwide disarmament exercise could help prevent further intercommunal violence in the country. The high-level standing committee for the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement says the bill on the disarmament of civil population is among several bills that have been submitted to the reconstituted Transitional National Legislative Assembly. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
South Sudan's Minister of Petroleum, Port Kang, says the country may face economic hardship if it continues to rely on oil revenues. Kang says the country should diversify its economy by investing in agriculture, mining, and other sectors. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu has more from Juba.
At a three-day economic forum in Juba this week, Petroleum Minister Port Kang Chol said over the next 2 decades, as the world prioritizes the use of clean energy, South Sudan's oil revenues may drop, which could adversely affect the country's economy. Kang says the push to shift from fossil fuels to clean energy was evident during global debates at climate change conferences in Cairo and Scotland last year, and that is going to affect oil sales for South Sudan.
If you look at the consumers, the big countries that are today taking much of oil all over the world, they are moving to clean energy. They are looking for other sources, notably China and India. Meaning once they are out of the way, we'll have very few buyers. You may have the oil, but it will be sold at a very cheaper price. That is number one. So what does it tell us? It tells us for South Sudan, what is sustainable for sure is agriculture, because the land will not deplete unless we environmentally abuse it.
Kang says South Sudan is not tapping into its agricultural potential, even though the country is blessed with abundant resources, including rich, fertile soil, aquatic resources, and forests.
You know, the only country where fish died in river because of old age is South Sudan. Last year, I went to Alaska, where they are doing fishing in the U.S. And people go there with permission. You are given a letter where you say approval that I'm going to look for 30 fish, and this type of fish, this is what I'm going to look for. You go to the river, any other fish that you catch, you release it to the river again. Because you got approval for what you must get. And you must only come with the amount that you are given, the approval. But in Terkeka here, who asked for approval?
When South Sudan gained independence, it used to produce up to 350,000 barrels of crude oil a day, but during the 5-year conflict, many oil fields were damaged or destroyed. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus yesterday, Kang said when the unity government was established in 2020, the Ministry of Petroleum tried to increase oil production from around 140,000 barrels per day to 160,000 barrels per day. But Kang said widespread flooding in 2021 and last year submerged several of the oil wells in water, halting production at several oil fields. He says production dropped to around 140,000 barrels per day. Kang says the United Nations Environment Program has written to the South Sudan Ministry of Petroleum asking it to start importing clean energy.
They are talking of July. This year, not any other year, we should begin to get fuel that does not have sulfur in it. Meaning, the refineries now are shifting. They are trying to, you know, the modular refineries, they are trying to put line that can produce that particular fuel. But because that particular fuel will not be everywhere, it will be expensive. Once it becomes expensive, the transportation becomes expensive. Once the transportation becomes expensive for a country like South Sudan, that import everything, including nothing, everything will be hell for us.
Crude oil is responsible for more than 90% of South Sudan's revenues. According to South Sudan's 2022-2023 fiscal year budget, agriculture is among the lowest funded sectors. It was allocated 55.9 billion South Sudanese pounds, that is about 4% of the overall 1.3 trillion South Sudanese pound budget. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, U.S. First Lady Jill Biden arrives in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Find out more after the break. U.S. First Lady Jill Biden was visibly moved during a visit Thursday to an informal settlement near Namibia's capital, where she spent time listening to young beneficiaries of U.S.-funded programs describe their tales of challenge and triumph in a nation that ranks as one of the world's most unequal societies. VOA's Anita Powell is traveling with the First Lady and reports from Windhoek, Namibia.
As a sudden afternoon storm beat down furiously on the metal roofs of the hastily constructed Katatura neighborhood, First Lady Jill Biden listened intently as young people described their work with the local Hope Initiatives program, which receives U.S. grant money. VOA asked her if she would take these stories back to Washington and lobby for an extension of the PEPFAR program, which, for two decades, has provided crucial support for nations struggling with the burden of HIV and AIDS.
I don't know whether I'll be lobbying Congress, but certainly I will be taking it back, and we'll see where it goes. I'll work with my staff and see where we'll take it. I mean, how many lives it has saved and how many lives it will continue to save. It's what, 20 years now, I think? Yeah, 20 years. So it's an amazing program.
Earlier in the day, Biden praised Namibia's vibrant democracy at a pomp-filled, wine-laden, dignitary-heavy state luncheon with Namibian First Lady Monica Geingos and her husband, President Hage Geingob.
I'm proud to be standing here, standing with a strong democracy. And as Monica said yesterday, a young democracy working together. As Joe said at the summit, African voices, African leadership, and African innovation are all critical to addressing the most pressing global challenges and realizing the vision we all share, a world that is free.
Thursday also happens to be the 30th anniversary of the sitting of Namibia's first post-independence upper house of parliament. Geingos, a Namibian entrepreneur and lawyer who was the president's third wife, said she invited the U.S. First Lady to visit after meeting at December's U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit in Washington.
Of course, there will always be differences. But what is important is what the Biden presidency represents, and that is decency, democracy, and diplomacy. This luncheon is to celebrate connection and possibility.
On Friday, Jill Biden plans to speak to university students about youth empowerment. She's the first White House official to visit Namibia after President Joe Biden last year pledged to send administration officials to the continent. She follows Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen and U.S. Ambassador to the UN Linda Thomas-Greenfield, who visited Africa earlier this year. But as an unelected official, the First Lady also brings a soft touch to this visit. As she prepared to leave Katatura, she made an unscheduled stop on the street, emerging from her SUV with a navy blue tote bag. Scores of small children, many in clothes that were torn or dirty, swarmed her as she handed out small boxes of M&Ms bearing President Joe Biden's seal and signature. She and granddaughter Naomi quickly passed out every box until she was faced with an empty bag and a young boy, his eyes wide. She motioned that she was out of candy, and he turned away. "Wait," she said to the little boy. He turned back. She handed him the tote bag. Anita Powell, VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
Still on the visit of the U.S. First Lady Jill Biden, she arrived in Kenyan capital Nairobi this evening. For more on the reaction of Kenyans, Ruben Chama went to the streets of Nairobi to understand the mood of some Kenyans on the visit.
My name is Priscilla Minayo, a student taking Kenyan Sign Language. I believe the visit by the American First Lady is of importance to Kenyans, for we as women and the youth of Kenya. Being that women, we've taken steps to get to where we are, but we still have more to do as women. So I believe in our visit to Kenya, this will boost the women empowerment in terms of economic empowerment, social empowerment, And once a woman is empowered, that means even the society is also empowered. And we need to be empowered so that we know how to deal with our families and take care of our children. In Africa, we see many children don't get enough nutrients that they are supposed to get. So as women, once we are empowered, it trickles down to the children and the society as a whole. So I believe her visit to Kenya is going to be of more benefit to we as a society, as a Kenyan people, and even to the youth.
My name is Peter. I'm doing creative media production. My expectation to the First Lady is to help us fund colleges and schools, because there's a high rate of unemployment currently. The U.S. can help us if she can fund some of us, even some people, to go and study in her country. It can really help the youth here in Kenya. There's a high rate of unemployment. And due to poverty, now there's a high rate of crime. So that has affected Kenyans.
My name is Tessie Maria from Shangtao Media Arts College. Her visit to Kenya could solve problems like inflation, which is really high in the country, and unemployment. The biggest issue young people in Kenya are facing right now, mostly the youth, is unemployment and lack of education. I would like the First Lady of the USA to assist students lacking in my country. Some students left school at high school level and they would like to join college, but they couldn't.
Of course, she's the First Lady, so it's a big opportunity for Kenyans. Her coming to the country increases how Kenya is known worldwide. For investors to acknowledge our country and come do their trade-based activities in Kenya. She obviously doesn't come alone. She will bring on board private investors, people who work with her in the United States. They will be able to exploit things in Kenya.
I'm Chandia Winnie Venusto. I expect that she's coming with a package that is meant to impact many women lives in Kenya. Reason being that her being a woman, she would leave a good example. Being a female herself could explain it better than any man could do. There is a lot of challenge there out for very many women in the labor market. The biggest percentage coming from our mother's generations are not educated.
Those were voices of Kenyans expressing their expectations on the visit of U.S. First Lady Jill Biden to Kenya. We love to hear your remarks on issues in this broadcast. We start with a voice message from a listener.
Hello, John Tanza and Nabil. This is Jacob Dio from Yero Lake State. The extension of transitional period to 2025 to conduct elections is a slap in the face of democracy that we have been singing as a country. I know the extension is sponsored by the National Parliament, because if they allow elections to happen, even 10% of them that were elected in 2010 won't come back. Anyway, all we need as citizens of this country is to let them give us peace and let them remain in power. Time will come when they will get tired of extensions. Thank you.
We heard a lot from you this week about the government's decision to do away with a provision in a law that allowed national security personnel to arrest people without a warrant in South Sudan. Mading Malwal Aluang in Juba writes, I don't see the reason why national security was given the right to arrest in the first place, let alone to arrest without a warrant. National security work should be limited to intelligence and information gathering. Issues of arrest should be left to police and the criminal division unit. We are waiting for the government of South Sudan to implement this particular resolution of banning national security personnel from arbitrary arrests. Elijah Michael Camino from Yambio County of Western Equatoria State says, Good evening, John. I really appreciate the move of our President Kiir and Cabinet Minister Elia Lomuro on the issue of arresting someone without a letter of arrest. Mal Adau Mal in Juba writes, Hello, VOA South Sudan in Focus. Scrapping the NSS article of arbitrary arrest is of great credit made by the government. Although granting NSSS this article in the first place was a weird decision. Where on earth does NSS personnel carry out these arrests? John Albert Badiangamo from Yambio says, Hello, VOA. Happy World Radio Day to all South Sudanese across the country. I listen to VOA because it is the most accurate radio to me and in my country, South Sudan. What I can say is let the government stop harassing journalists and create a conducive environment for them to do their jobs, safe and secure. I sincerely appreciate you, John Tanza, Dengai Deng, Carol Van Damme, Juliana Shiapai, Nabil Biagio, and other journalists. May Almighty God bless you guys for keeping us South Sudanese updated about what is happening in our country. Bida Isaac, a refugee in Uganda, writes, thanks to VOA for being a voice for the voiceless. To stop killings in South Sudan, we need the government to collect all firearms in the hands of civilians, not forgetting those cattle herders who are troublesome all the time, guarding their animals with modern machine guns given by some government officials to their relatives. Isaac Sabr Khamis of Yambio in Western Equatorial State says, hello, Nabil. The South Sudan Unity Government must expedite the execution of the key remaining provisions left untouched in the agreement within the one-year extension. Otherwise, citizens are tired of excuses all the time. The citizens are tired of appointed government officials. Samuel Remo in Yei writes, hi, John Tanza and Nabil Biagio. Instability in South Sudan and Democratic Republic of Congo reminds us of the big threat to farmers who want to extract their wealth from the soil. Peter Goch Anyang Majongdul in Block 3, Bor Town says, hello Tanza and Nabil. As Nigerians are going for general elections, I wish them free and fair elections to show political maturity to the continent in 48 hours' time. Peter Jack Ayom in Block 3, Bor Jongle Estate writes, hello John Tanza and Nabil. I'm urging the government to implement the remaining parts of the peace agreement, such as the constitutional amendment, reunification of the army, early preparations for elections within the extension period. South Sudanese have suffered enough. They need peace. Boboya Francis Wani from Yei County says, hello, John Tanza and Nabil Biagio. Allow me this evening to congratulate you for your efforts such that the truth shall be spoken. However, the latest in Yei market is that things are getting higher each day, and the presence of cattle keepers made businessmen and women raise the prices of their products because they can sell at any price without negotiation with the cattle keepers, hence affecting the locals. The opinions expressed here do not reflect the views of VOA or of this program. We appreciate you sharing your thoughts. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. Send your brief voice and text messages and we shall sample them every Friday. That's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now leave you with Awile Longomba and the song Break Your Back. Listening to Awile Longomba and the song Break Your Back. I'm your host John Tanza on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. Thanks for taking time to be with us. Remember to join us for another edition next week.